As a survivor of teenage cancer, Dr. Eric Watts took up a career in medicine and worked as a GP in Clapham and Canada before specialising in haematology. Eric became a consultant and later became clinical director at Basildon Hospital. One of Dr. Eric's projects is the Brentwood Cancer Support and Survivorship Group, otherwise known as Tea and Talk at Toby's, which has been running for well over a year now. Dr. Eric joins me now. Welcome, Eric. How are you?
Hello, Bob. Yes, well, thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. So, first of all, I mean, we're going to cover quite a lot today because you're a man who wears many hats and a bit of a silly wig sometimes, as I've seen a photograph of you. First of all, though, the serious business. Could you remind us of the aims of the Brentwood Cancer Support and Survivorship Group and tell us how it's all going?
Yes. The aims are quite simple. Those of us who've been through the experience of being treated for cancer realise it can be a very, very lonely experience. It can be very frightening, and in addition to the simple business of being ill and having treatment, which often has side effects which make you feel worse, there's the issue of uncertainty and the whole problem of how do you speak and share your, how do you speak to other people, how do you share your feelings with other people, as a lot of people find it very difficult to handle the amount of emotion that is involved in the problems that you're going through. So you often find that people seem no longer pleased to see you. It's not at all unusual to hear people say that they see people cross the street to avoid them rather than to meet them. And so most people who've had cancer have had these problems of, first of all, not wanting to be ill in the first place, not wanting to have the treatment, but the treatment for many people makes a lot of difference. A lot of people get better having been through the hard period of chemotherapy and radiotherapy. There is a very well-established now body of knowledge that of what works and what doesn't, so we're getting more selective in treating patients and we're seeing benefit, but it is still a lonely experience and a lot of people find it very hard to talk to friends and family about it. So the whole purpose of setting it up in the first place was to say, we know, we understand, nothing you say will upset or embarrass us because we know it ourselves, how difficult can be. So it's somewhere you can come and talk with no fear of either upsetting people or of us in any way judging you and saying that you shouldn't be feeling this way. Everyone has a right to feel upset when they're going through a difficult period, but sometimes it's not encouraged.
No, right. So what happens at a typical meeting of the group?
Right, well, we've started off with the emphasis, first of all, on simply getting people together and being as friendly and accommodating as possible. And we're very welcome, we're very grateful for Toby's for allowing us in. So we start off.
Sorry to interrupt. This, of course, is the Toby Carvery in Brentwood, isn't it? That's where you meet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we meet there first Monday of every month, except when there's a bank holiday, in which case it's the second Monday. And we provide hot drinks, cold drinks, tea, of course, and coffee, biscuits and a bit of cake so that people can come in and relax. And the conversation usually starts off being very, very ordinary with the hellos.
Yeah, yeah.
And usually we find there's enough people who want to talk about those issues in their lives which are simply the matter-of-fact sort of things that you have to get through. Usually people will talk about the issues that come up with respect to treatment, difficulties with treatment. Losing the appetite is a very common one. A change of appetite is a very common one. I remember from my radiotherapy days, I went off pie and chips and ate salad. My mother was delighted,
right.
But it was quite a substantial way of making a change.
Yeah.
There are other ways in which we can help people, because I must emphasise that although I'm a doctor, I'm retired and I don't give medical advice of any sort, but a lot of people find it hard simply to make their way through all the different aspects of treatment and the follow-up appointments. And by far the commonest problem that we hear is people who have been to hospital, who have been either an inpatient or had outpatient treatments and then told, right, the treatment's over, and they often feel lost because right. they have, over the weeks or months, become very used to the support that they get at the hospital.
Right.
And when that finishes, they often feel much more lonely than they felt at the time that they've been given the diagnosis, which is another time. So that one of the things we've been keen to do is to have people from the hospitals. We have often have people dropping in from Basildon Hospital or from Queen's, and also from Chelmsford. And so we have nurses or the Macmillan staff dropping in to say, here we are, yeah. if you need any further information. Yeah. So the commonest problem is someone's been discharged and they're beginning to think about what's happening and developing the sort of natural questions along the lines of what happens next.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't have a contact. So we make a point of saying, this is an important thing, and we have a Tea and Talk page now, and I've put this on the Tea and Talk page. If you've been discharged from hospital and you have concerns, you don't know who to turn to, in addition to ourselves, the practical help you can get is from your CNS. That stands for Clinical Nurse Specialist.
Right.
So every patient who has been treated for cancer will have assigned to them a clinical nurse specialist, and they can get in touch with that nurse after they've been just discharged. If they've been discharged but they don't know who their clinical nurse specialist is, then phone the hospital, ask for the lead cancer nurse, who will be able to say, this is your clinical nurse specialist, and put them in touch so that they can deal with those details. What we deal with when we meet with people is basically social support and the encouragement that you get from meeting other people in the same boat.
Yeah, sounds great. I mean, it is an awful journey for anyone have to go through the treatment, and it can be very lonely, as you've alluded to there. So who actually comes along to the group? Who is the group for? Is it just for people who have been diagnosed as suffering with cancer?
It is primarily for those people who have the illness, but of course other people are affected too. Mm. Families are affected, yeah. So that we do have people. It's not unusual to have a young person and bring in mum or dad,
yeah.
So
yeah.
that because a lot of the mums and dads will be of an age where this sort of thing didn't happen, where people relied much more on friends and neighbours. But in modern times, people move around much more than yeah. they do, and a lot of the old-fashioned social networks don't exist.
Yeah.
So we have a number of people who would probably be older than me, and I'm 70 next month.
Oh.
Who
you look better than me.
But we have a lot of people who remember the good old days.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
you did talk to friends and neighbours over the garden wall much more than we do now.
That's right.
And so a lot of them like to reminisce about old times. And we have, say, the commonest number is the people who've been recently discharged and just want to get their way back to normal and are uncomfortable in social situations, but we make sure that people don't feel uncomfortable in these situations.
Yeah.
So that's the commonest number of people, and some people like to come back, some people like to drop in. And I remember for myself, when I discovered self-help groups, the most useful thing was to drop in and find, good heavens, everybody thinks the same way as me.
Yeah.
I'm not unusual.
Yeah.
And with that reassurance, you can go off and face the world again.
Yeah, fabulous. What a great idea. So for anyone out there who might be interested in getting involved in your group, where and when does it happen again, and how can people get involved?
Yes, it's Toby's opposite the Town Hall, and just off Shenfield Common, Toby's Carvery. First Monday of every month, start at 10 o'clock, close at 12. And say, Toby's have been very nice to let us use the premises during that period of time. You'll see one or two of us with our orange shirts,
okay.
which reminds me that we have a very good partnership with Orange Line, which is the telephone helpline service run by St Francis.
Oh, okay. Yes, lovely. Okay, well, we'll put some details up on the Phoenix FM website. We'll put your Facebook page up there, a link to it as well. Now, even though you're a retired consultant and clinical director, you're still very much involved with local NHS service, and I understand big changes are planned. Can you tell us a bit about what's going on? What are the main changes?
Right. Thank you for that.
You've got a huge volume in front of you.
The big version, the small version. Fortunately, there's the even smaller one entitled Mid and South Essex Sustainability and Transformation Partnership. So it's been a slight change in the title of a very big scheme that was announced in June 2016, when it was called the Essex Success Regime. There are three areas in the country: Essex, the West Country, Cornwall Way, and Cumbria, where the Department of Health and Simon Stevens announced these areas have special problems. They're always overspent, and we need to have a completely new look at how to organise the services there to stop this cycle of overspending, which goes on from year to year. Now, the area which got the most publicity was the plan which is going through, to make the three hospitals work together in a more coherent way. Right. And what that means is that, subject to approval, of course, and the reason why I'm speaking about it now is there's a consultation period which will go through to the 9th of March, so that anyone who has views and questions can put them in and get an answer. So, say, the fundamental area was to say that we have three hospitals, each of them doing the same thing, and this day and age there are economies to be made from having bigger units which are more specialised, and so the plan is to distribute those between, or rather to redistribute, so you've got the benefits of specialisation. So most of the emergency services is due to be centralised at Basildon, and the cancer services, because the radiotherapy units are at Southend, will be primarily in Southend. But there is also the opportunity, and I think this is something that a lot of people in Brentwood and Billericay would be keen to know about, that more treatment can be given at Brentwood Community Hospital. So that's in the plan.
Oh, right.
And so it's one of those areas where there are definite advantages. One of the main points that keeps being made is a lot of people who go to hospital don't need to be there. The challenge is to make sure that the right people who do need to go to hospital get there quickly, and that those people who don't need to go to hospital have care near home, so that the current title of the consultation plan is Your Care in the Best Place.
Okay, yes, yes. So, I mean, I don't know anything about the proposals, but you've worked in the health service for most of your working life, I imagine. How do you think this is likely to affect provision of local services and individuals seeking those services? It seems to me maybe it might get better, but people will have to travel further for specialist care. Would you sort of agree with that? Or?
That was one of our first questions when the public consultation began. When I say public consultation, there have been public meetings held throughout last year, and I was one of those people who was invited on to be what's called the Service Users Advisory Group. So we've had more meetings with the organisers, and they have been at pains to work out ways of making sure people travel as infrequently as possible, and so that if you think of what the care involves, a lot of people, thousands of people, have outpatient appointments, far, far more than inpatient. So for some specialised inpatient services, for example, people needing a hip or knee replacement may go to Southend or to one of the other hospitals, as opposed to having that work done at Basildon. There is a plan and I'm looking at page 10 of the 56-page document called Your Care in the Right Place Now, in respect of getting more treatment done at home and in the community, and that they pick out self-care, which can be accessed through various information points such as NHS 111 and on the NHS website. General practice is going to change, so that people have previously been receptionists, the plan is to call, is to give them a different role than that of care navigator. So you may phone up and say, I've got a pain in my leg, and the care navigator may be able to help to address that, so that you see a physiotherapist who's better able to help that particular problem. This is all work in progress. There's a huge amount that is going on in other areas called vanguard sites, and what is really important is to look at the results and see what works and do it, what's not, what has potential but needs more development, and carry on with that development work. So there will be a lot of changes happening over a period of time, at least 5 years, and there are opportunities for people to say, I like the idea of this, or I'm not so sure about that, and make sure that their concerns are heard.
Right, so it's all pretty fluid at the moment. I can be a bit of a cynic sometimes, and nowadays there's always a suspicion that changes in the provision of NHS services are brought about by political interference or cost-cutting exercises. What do you feel are the genuine reasons behind these proposed changes?
Well, one of the most important things to say is the NHS has never stood still, because there's always new developments coming on. And when I look back at my own career, I remember that I qualified in 1971, and that one of the commonest conditions we saw there were heart attacks, and that we prided ourselves, where I worked in Glasgow, in being very progressive, in that instead of having patients on bed rest for 6 weeks, which was the norm, we had patients out in 3 weeks. Now it's more like 3 days. That things will change, so that, and also people with long memories will remember there used to be a lot of sanatoria and TB hospitals. So change is always happening. However, there's little doubt that for some people change is threatening and uncomfortable. But to answer your question directly, there is a limited amount of money going into the NHS, and the arguments for increased funding are being made all the time, and they're being made by people who are able to say, as this happens prior to the budget, if you give us 4% extra, this is what we'll be able to do. We'll be able to cut waiting lists down. We'll be able to provide more treatments. But we had, I think it was 1.4% increased funding, and the King's Fund have been, who are an independent body of experts, have been very clear in saying that delays the rate of progress. Now, having said that, every country knows that there are limits to how much you can spend on health. There is a law of diminishing returns. I remember very well, because I, having worked in Canada for a small time, doing my young man tripping around the world phase,
seeing the world,
doing all that, that there were people there who generally felt if they imported more doctors from Europe, they would have much better care. Now, it's clear from what happens that there are those elements of care where you get good return on your money, and there's even a measurement called a QALY, which stands for quality adjusted life year, where you can see good returns for your money. And the most important thing you can do in terms of improving health is simply telling people to stop smoking. That's enormously beneficial, but it takes time for the benefit to work through. So there's a lot of good work in prevention. Now we know about the problems with obesity, we know about the problems with diabetes and in its relation to lifestyle and diet and so on, so that there's a huge amount to be done in terms of prevention that's being done now. And every economy knows that you have to choose how best to spend your money, and that investment in prevention is very worthwhile. But once someone's got an illness, when somebody's ill, you've got to get on and treat that. If we if we were able to invest more now, I mentioned the budget and how I came short of what people are wanting, it means people waiting longer for those treatments, which can be delayed, and more investment. And this was shown by very detailed economic analysis of the health service between 2002 and 2010, that the investment gave measurable benefits, particularly in respect of waiting lists, so that we could use more money. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, you get what you pay for at the end of the day, don't you? Yeah. All right, Eric. Well, thanks very much. The consultation that is going on at the moment about all this, can you tell us where people can make their views known?
Right. It's called the Sustainability and Transformation Partnership, STP, and the here we have it. You can go onto the net and look for Mid and South Essex STP, and they also have an email which is meccgstpconsultation@nhsnet, or if they just Google South Essex STP, they will get it.
Okay, well, again, we'll put a link to that on our website. Well, thanks very much. Now, I know you're a bit of an athlete on the quiet, aren't you? Are you still running marathons?
I am, yes. Yeah. It's a cold day for training today, and we've had cold snaps, but I'm keen to do well now that I'm I'll be 70 for the next marathon, because you're grouped into age gaps. Yes, yeah, thank you very much. Right. And when my wife ran the Brighton Marathon, she was fifth in her age group, right. And I've got nothing like that. So when I'm the youngest of my age group, I've got a chance to do well.
I see what you mean. And you're running the London Marathon this year for the Teenage Cancer Trust.
That's right. It's a trust I've supported for a few marathons now. As soon as I found out about them, I was interested, of course, because the problem of being a teenager with cancer, if you're in a general unit, is you're usually the only young person. I remember that very well from my old time. Yeah. And what the Teenage Cancer Trust does, amongst other things, the most important thing, where the money goes, is they have specialist units, which means as a teenager, you'll be surrounded by people of your own age and doctors and nurses who have chosen to work with teenagers, because not everybody likes teenagers. You remember that from your own teenage years. Yeah. And that it's well known amongst the doctors I worked with, but that some of them really feel much happier dealing with older people. So it's horses for courses. And the doctors who work at the nearest unit we have is at UCLH on Euston Road in London. I've been there to see patients that I've referred there, and I was delighted to see how well things go. You know, if you are a teenager with cancer, you really do benefit from going there, because they are just so good at helping people with all the problems I mentioned at the start of the interview.
Sure. Well, fantastic. Well, good luck with the marathon. When's that? Is it April, is it?
It is the 22nd of April.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck on the day. Hope you make it round. I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
And as well as all that, you also play the saxophone in a jazz band, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I'm not sure if we'd officially qualify as jazz. We're sort of pop, and I like rock and roll as well, you know, and the blues.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, if you're ever looking for a singer, we have a wonderful singer here on Phoenix FM, and I'm going to play a track from her now. It's Michelle Ward, and the presenter is normally on before me, and her latest song, which is Secret Song. Good luck with everything you're involved in, and particular the cancer support group Tea and Talk at Toby's, and of course the marathon. That's Dr. Eric Watts. Thanks ever so much, Eric.